Now, friends, we come today to the 25th chapter of Deuteronomy, and if you have your Bible handy, turn there, because this is a remarkable chapter also, and I say that about every chapter, because every chapter is remarkable. You have in this chapter the punishment of the guilty, and you have the law that protected widows, and you have punishment for crimes, and judgment of Amalek. This is quite good, by the way. Now, first of all, there were certain crimes, apparently, that arose through difficulties between individuals. I think that our legal nomenclature today call them misdemeanors. I think that's what they would be called. There would not be a serious crime that would merit life or death, but one that there should be punishment. And let me read. If there be a controversy between men, and they come under judgment, that the judges may judge them, then they shall justify the righteous and condemn the wicked. And it shall be, if the wicked man be worthy to be beaten, that the judge shall cause him to lie down and to be beaten before his face, according to his fault, by a certain number. 40 stripes he may give him, and not exceed, lest if he should exceed, and beat him above these with many stripes, then thy brother should seem vile unto thee. In fact, there'd be danger of him killing the man, of course, but 40 would be the limit, but it could be any number of stripes, 1 to 40. And I suppose that practically every number was used in their long history. I'm sure of that. This is a method of punishment that has gone entirely out of style. I have heard several outstanding Christian attorneys today. I listened to two or three of them talking some time ago, and they all agreed that today they could break up a great deal of this lawlessness if there was public flogging. That is, if a man was caught committing a certain crime today, he's not to be executed for it, but he should be punished and not put in an air-conditioned jail for a few days, because, after all, he's a loafer to begin with, and the jail is just a cool place for him to loaf in our day. But if he was taken out and publicly flogged, these lawyers felt it would break up a great deal of crime. Well, at least God thought so, and that's the way he did it. And I think the answer to this type of thing is that there was not too much serious crime in Israel. They had a pretty low crime level, and not like it is today. Then he says, verse 4, thou shalt not muzzle the ox when he treadeth out the corn. I think that's a lovely thing. In other words, here's an ox, and you've seen them in that land, or pictures of them. I watched one over there for, oh, I don't know how long. It was an Arab, and the ox was going around, and do you know, he had his ox muzzled. God said, don't do that. The ox is treading out your corn. He's working. Let him eat. God's concern is a very wonderful thing. And then another thing that makes it very interesting is that Paul reached in and lifted this verse out. What about this? Well, Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 9:9, he says, for it is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth God take care for oxen? Then Paul goes on to make application. And you know what he does? He says, if we have sown unto you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? If others be partakers of this power over you, are not we rather? Nevertheless, we've not used this power, but suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. And you know how Paul used that? He used it like this. Pay your preacher. The man that's ministering to you of spiritual things, then you in turn are to feed him with material things. That is the way Paul made application of this. Thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. And that's all, I guess, some of us are. I make a record here, a tape. I'm making one right now here in my study, and I'm looking at the tape. And you know what? It's just going round and round. I'm not going round and round. I guess some people think I do. But I'm just watching it go round and round. I feel just like an ox, and I'm treading out corn. I'm trying to, you know, tread out corn. And you know what God says? Don't muzzle the ox that treads out the corn. That's a very interesting law, is it not? I'll let you make application of that, by the way. And now I move on to another one. And you can't make me believe that God does not have a sense of humor. He made a law here that, honestly, it was a good law. And it worked effectively. And we're going to see it in the book of Ruth. But it's the way God took care of widows. And it's almost humorous. In fact, to me, it's very humorous. Let me read this. Verse 5. If brethren dwell together, and one of them die, and have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her, and take her to him to wife, and perform the duty of a husband's brother unto her. And it shall be that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of his brother which is dead, that his name be not put out of Israel. Now, this was God's method of taking care of his people. In other words, he was protecting womanhood. Now, we hear a great deal about women's rights today. Well, God thought they had some rights also. Now, here is a man, and we need to get this right down and see it in its application in that land. Here is a man living in that land. And he dies. He's a farmer. Most of those people, they either were dealing in agriculture or they were dealing in animals. They were raising sheep or oxen. And suppose this man dies. He leaves a big farm, a lot of wheat, a lot of corn. And also he has sheep and he has oxen. Now that poor widow, she's not able to take care of all of that. Now, here's a man maybe from another tribe or even a man from outside, a foreigner who wants to marry her. But no, she's not permitted to marry outside. But she has a privilege that's quite unique for a widow. This is a case where the widow does the proposing. What she can do is to go and claim one of her husband's brothers. And if it's not a brother, a cousin, she can go to the nearest relative, or any one of them she wants to go to, and say, look, I've chosen you. And it's just same as asking him to marry her. And that's what he'd have to do, by the way, or almost have to do. It'd be a disgrace to him if he didn't marry. Now, notice this, how it went into operation. Verse 7, and if the man like not to take his brother's wife. Now, here's a man that said, look, I told my brother when he fell in love with this girl, because he's a sickly fella, I said to him, I don't want you to marry her because if something happens to you, I don't want to marry her. Then what can the poor man do? Then let his brother's wife go up to the gate unto the elders and say, my husband's brother refuseth to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel. He'll not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Now, she can take him into court, you see. If he refuses, she just takes him right into court. And she tells it like it is. Then the elders of the city shall call him and speak unto him. And if he stand to it and say, I like not to take her. Now, suppose when he's brought into court, he says, I don't like this at all. Now, notice the penalty. Then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders, and loose his shoe from off his foot, and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, so shall it be done unto that man that will not build up his brother's house. In other words, the man's disgraced for not performing that which he should according to the law, and it reveals the fact that he is not being true to his brother, or his family, or his tribe, or his nation. And actually, to his God, man's disgrace. These women suffragettes years ago said, the Bible's a man's book. My friend, it's a woman's book. I believe, actually, more than a man's book. God's always protecting women and children. And here's the instance. Now, here is a widow, and this is the way God protects her. She's got a right to go to one of the brothers, anyone she wants to go to, or a cousin, or an uncle, anyone. Now, we're going to see that law in operation when we get to the book of Ruth, by the way, because it was used, and used effectively in that book, by the way. Now, let me just give an illustration of how it must have worked. Here's a man that lives way up in the Ephraim country. He raises cattle, and he raises sheep, and he raises barley up there. He has a barley farm, and he has about four or five sons, fine boys. Now, one of these boys, one night, he gets the lantern down, and he lights it, and he starts down the road whistling. And believe me, the other brothers wonder where he's gone. He hadn't said anything about it. And so along about 11 o'clock that night, they hear him coming down the road, and they can see the light from the lantern, and he's whistling again. This time he's really whistling. And so he comes in, goes to bed, doesn't say a word to anybody. The brothers wonder. And so they forget it, though, because they think that's it. But the next night, he gets the lantern down again, and here he starts down the road again, and he's whistling. And when he comes home, why, he's still whistling. And they wonder, but he doesn't say anything to them. So the boys do some investigating and wonder about what's taking place. So the next night, here he goes again. And he starts off whistling. And long about 11 o'clock, or maybe later that night, he comes home, and he's not whistling, he's singing. He comes in, he goes to bed, doesn't say a word. So the next morning, they have a family huddle. And the brethren call him in and said, Look here, Benjamin, where you been going at night? Oh, he said, down the road. Well, they say, that's obvious. But where do you end up when you go down the road? Oh, he said, just going down the road. He doesn't give them much information, you see. But they've done a little investigate. And they said, now there's a new family down the road. Could it be that you have been going there? Oh, he said, it could be. Well, they said, we'd like to know. Have you been going down to visit this new family? Oh, he said, yes, to tell the truth, I have. Says, I believe in the good neighbor policy, and I've gone down to welcome them into our neighborhood. Well, they said, is it true that there is a daughter in that family? Oh, this boy says, yes, I think there is. Well, they said, is it possible you've been going down to see her? And he says, it's possible. Well, they said, have you been going to see that girl? And he said, well, if you want to put it like that, I have. They say, wait a minute, we've seen the girl. Well, frankly, we don't care too much for her. And before you get any notions, you go to the doctor or the clinic and you have a physical test. We want to make sure you're in good health before you marry her, because none of us want to marry her. And he says, well, if you really want to know the truth, I proposed to her tonight and she accepted me. And I want to tell you that they really then get right down to business, because this is a family affair. You could see how that drew families together in Israel, could you not? This was God's way of actually drawing families very close together, and also of protecting widows and actually protecting the land, because it would stay in the same family, you see. This was God's method of protecting the land and widows and his people. And actually, was a very good law, by the way. Now you have here a list of punishment for certain crimes that are committed here, when men strive together one with another, and so on. And there would be certain penalties exacted, actually certain amount of money paid in case a man was hurt in that kind of an altercation. Now you have here at verse 17 another reminder of Amalek. And we've had Amalek before us now two or three times. You remember they attacked the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt? They attacked them when they came to Kadesh Barnea. They were nomads out on that desert. Now we have something concerning Amalek here. Notice verse 17. Remember what Amalek did unto thee by the way when ye were come forth out of Egypt, how he met thee by the way and smote the hindmost of thee, even all that were feeble behind thee, when thou wast faint and weary, and he feared not God. Therefore it shall be, when the Lord thy God hath given thee rest from all thine enemies round about in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance to possess it, that thou shalt blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven, thou shalt not forget it. Now, Amalek, as we have suggested before, way back in the book of Exodus, you'll recall that when they came out of Egypt, that at that time they were attacked by Amalek. And you remember Moses went to the top of the mountain, Aaron and Hur held up his hands in prayer to God. And when the hands were up, why, Joshua, who led the forces of Israel, he was the one who won. And when his hands were let down, they lost. Then the Lord says two things at that time which are quite interesting. He says, for I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. That is chapter 17, verse 14 in the book of Exodus. Amalek, as we suggested before, represents the flesh. God intends to eventually get rid of the flesh. The old nature can never enter heaven. You and I have an old nature that can never be obedient unto God. You probably have sensed that you have it. We're going to deal with it quite thoroughly when we get to the epistle to the Romans. But this is the illustration of it. But long as you're in this life, you'll never get rid of the flesh. For in that 17th chapter of Exodus, he says in the last verse, verse 16, for he said, because the Lord hath sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. Now, we saw last time that the flesh is something you're not to despise. And you don't overcome the flesh by becoming ascetic or trying to beat it down or to become especially religious or pious and that type of thing. That won't get you anywhere at all. But there is a war going on in each one of us between the spirit and the flesh. The spirit warreth against the flesh against the spirit, and these are contrary. That's what Paul says in Galatians. Now, you can't overcome by fighting. The only way you can overcome is by the Spirit of God, and only the Spirit of God can produce the fruits of the Spirit in our lives today. It's a victory that can only come through the Holy Spirit of God working in our lives. So that what you have here is the Lord again saying that he's going to blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven, and you'll not forget it. And I thank God that he intends to get rid of the flesh someday.